This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
What's up? What's happening? We are live from Indianapolis again, the NFL Scouting Combine show 2 of 2, although, man, we got a lot coming for you later in the week that we can't even fit on the show today. Sorry to just tease everybody off the top here, but I literally talked to three of the best draft analysts in the game today, and we literally don't have time in the show to get to it. So we're going to do that on Friday. You'll hear from ESPN's Matt Miller, The Athletic's Dane Brugler, and NFL.com's Lance Zierlein all later in the week on Friday. So you can look forward to that here on the Team 980. But as for today, I also sat down a little bit earlier with Mark Ross of NFL Network. He is going to we're going to air that at 5:30. He is awesome always and was just absolutely delivered as he usually does. And Ben Standing is going to join us live at 5 to discuss the big news of the day, which is that the Commanders have done quite well for themselves when it comes to the NFLPA's annual report card. And we'll talk about the John Allen stuff and all the other pieces of news that DQ and everybody else made today around the Commanders with Ben at 5. But I remember a year ago sitting in this room. I was somewhere over there as opposed to over here. The tables last year were flipped. This year they're you know, horizontal. Last year they were vertical, if you will. So plenty has changed. But I remember sitting in this room, Hall J, in the Hoosier corridor of the Indianapolis Convention Center last year, when it just started like wildfire kind of going around the room. Oh, the NFLPA report card is out. The Commanders this, like the Chiefs that, and some of the teams that got passing, failing, whatever grades, and all the teams all of a sudden. I'm sure the coaches just absolutely love that this thing comes out on the day that they hold, or many of them hold, their media availability, because then they get asked about it. And like DQ was asked about it today, and you'll hear from him in a moment. But I remember that the Commanders still had so many failing grades. And obviously, Rivera was, gone at that point a year ago, but this group had not really gotten the chance to get in and change anything. All those grades, you know, as much, I don't want to say as much fun, as much as fans, some fans, not all fans, as much as some fans like latched on to, oh my God, nothing's changed because they got all these Fs all over the place and Josh Harris hasn't changed this yet. Like, the test is taken in October and the grades come out in February, and literally nothing that was the reality of the moment was represented. Now, as the Commanders receive all kinds of passing grades, it's because the things that they have made changes on have actually taken hold. So there's a bunch of different areas that that are graded here. The first thing is the one that actually, and Anthony, sorry to do this to you on the air. Do we have the Quinn bite? It was like the first thing he was asked about at the podium today. The first thing that DQ mentioned was actually the first grade that's on this list, the treatment of families, where last year I believe they had an F, and this year they get a B+. And Dan says, like, that is actually really not about him, and although we're going to get to some very specific DQ stuff in a moment, but about the people above him and what they have done.
The first thing I thought of, I was pleased to see treatment of families, and that goes to Josh, honestly, and Adam. There's no gap in between what he says and what he does. And so to have that type of reflection in a year is really big. We told him how important this was to us. He heard that from the players and then took action on that. And I think that's honestly like what that relationship has been for us. What do you need to win? And how do we go about and do that? And so to see things like family support and having that increase, that's really big. The families, our families, players, coaches, the organization, they make a lot of sacrifices for us to do what we can do. And so to have that right there, team travel, all those, to me, just reflect back to Josh and the vision of what it can be. And I couldn't be more proud to be part of it.
And he's right. Those are a reflection of ownership, because you have to spend to fix those things, and those things, to do them right, cost money. They cost money in terms of facilities. They cost money in terms of having things available. Like, if they have a family room at the game and they want food in it, that food costs money. They need people to staff it. They need people to make sure the interactions between the players' families and the organization are good. Like, that involves human capital, which is salaried and paid for. It involves resources. It involves money. And you can put your money where your mouth is or not. And the Commanders got that grade from an F all the way up to a B+. Their food and dining area, they've made renovations in Ashburn, B+. Nutritionist, dietitian, C+. Be curious to read a little bit more about that. Locker room is an F. We'll come back to that. Training room, C+. We'll come back to that. Training staff, B+. Weight room, B-. Strength coach is A. Team travel, A. Head coach, A+. Ownership, A. They, considering where they were a year ago, that is a remarkable amount of progress. Now, are they the worst team in the league in terms of locker room? Yep. Actually, no, because the Browns and Cardinals got F-. The Commanders got an F, the Broncos got an F, the Browns got an F-, and the Cardinals got an F-. Locker rooms are much bigger projects. It's a ton of space that has to get renovated versus some of the smaller spaces. And I would imagine that is on the to-do list, especially now. If it wasn't already, it is now. But it's not good enough. They renovated it a couple years, like 7-8 years ago, to where it used to be just embarrassing. Like, you know, a high school locker room that was built in the 70s at an NFL size. Like, it was terrible. And now they at least have modernized it. But clearly there's a long way to go. Do I think Josh Harris will make that investment and make that investment soon? Yeah. Yeah, I do. The other ones that I think are interesting to talk about, training room, same thing as locker room, but they've already made upgrades there. But can they get a bigger training room? Their weight room gets a B-. And that what that tells you is, like, the infrastructure in Ashburn, the actual physical buildings, like, they need work. But they have plans to continue to do that. Like, I would say those grades are not probably a surprise to Josh Harris, a surprise to Dan Quinn, a surprise to Adam Peters. But the things that you can change quickly, the ways that the humans that are these people, that are the players' families, interact with the organization, those are the things that graded out best. The outside of nutritionist, dietitian, which that one I'm curious to read more on. That's one that's worth double-clicking on, and I assume that they'll make changes if they feel like they need to. But training staff, B+. Strength coaches, A. They've been an A for years in Washington. Chad Englehart and his crew do a great job, and the players love them. Team travel, just upgrading how they get around and where they stay and all those kinds of things. Done. Head coach, A+. And obviously ownership, A. Like, they did as much as they could as quickly as possible while understanding that there are parts of this that are going to take time. And I think they just deserve a ton of credit. But the biggest one there is the A-plus for Dan Quinn. Players talked about how he's efficient with their time. Obviously, the relationships and the brotherhood that he helped foster and develop. And I just think to the questions that we had a year ago. I was high on Quinn, and I think that was heavily influenced by what I heard from Dan, the interview that we did with him at the Super Bowl last year, obviously what I learned from Logan and how much Logan likes and respects Dan, and everyone else that I talked to, that I just couldn't find a bad word to be said about Dan Quinn. So I was high on him, but a lot of people have had to do the mea culpa. We've had some fun with it on the show where folks have called in and said, like, yep, I was one of the people that was really ticked that they hired Dan Quinn. I was wrong. Okay, fine. We all get takes wrong. But to see not just they didn't make a mistake, but they got one of the absolute best in the league. Wow. Like that, just think about even a year ago. Again, he hadn't managed a game yet. He hadn't run a practice yet. Like this was all hope and what could be. And now we see what has been. He led them to the NFC Championship game. He rebuilt the culture within a year. I think the other thing he did is he was able to suss out, like, when you think of Terry McLaurin, Terry predates Dan, obviously, but, like, Terry is one of their guys. And so, you know, they'll extend him. Sam Cosmi, they already did, right? They gave Sam the contract last fall. They figured out pretty quickly, like, oh, yeah, if we had been here, then he's a guy that we would have taken. He would have gotten the commander tag. And Dan and Adam, but Dan specifically, his ability to be in that locker room, to figure out who the right voices were to empower, the way he managed Jaden this year, just truly, truly, truly sensational. And he deserves that A-plus grade, and obviously all the success that came with it. Probably already told you that. When we get back, you'll hear more from DQ as he stepped to the podium today here in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. Also, we had about a 15-minute scrum with him on the side amongst mostly local reporters. A couple national folks snuck in, and I was like, hey, get out of here. You don't belong here. But we had a good chat with DQ. Always says interesting stuff. So we'll get you some of that next. Then Rhett Lewis sits down live at 4:30 from NFL Network, the host of The Path to the Draft. So we'll talk to him about the upcoming draft class and what he's looking for this week here in Indy. And then at 5 o'clock, Ben Standig on all the latest Commanders news. We're rolling on a Wednesday on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Before we get to Dan Quinn bites, Anthony, I shouldn't make fun of this. This is me absolutely asking for it. But I may have just gotten one of the funniest emails you could possibly get in Indianapolis.
Was it from Shane?
What the hell's wrong with you?
My bad. I thought that would have been funny.
No, I mean, if anything from Shane is definitely funny. No, we got an email from the league saying that there is a media member that has lost a notebook. And if it is found, please text whatever the number is. And just the idea of a reporter losing a note, I mean, that is horrifying. If, depending on, like, especially how you take your notes. Like, if you're someone who has the audio and whatever else is backup, okay, fine. But if you don't, and, like, that was the way that you doing it, or depending on what's on that notebook, I mean, if you have conversations with sources, whatever, like, that is legitimately terrifying. But I just, like, at this giant NFL media nerd convention that is this side of the NFL Combine, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Lost my notebook. And for someone, that nightmare has come true.
Yeah, that stinks. I'm not going to lie. That stinks.
I feel bad for them. I hope they find it. I hope it is found. I hope it is returned. I hope it is done with care. I hope no one's snooping notes. Just if there's a rogue notebook somewhere out here in Indianapolis, and I hope it's returned to its rightful owner.
Yeah. And I hope they don't get prank called, because that number is now out there.
Anyway, I mean, that ain't a big deal. By the way, also, other funny bits from the Combine. Get in here. Hold on. Tonight on NBC4, you got to be on this side if we're going to do this as a video
I'd like
bit.
It to reveal my...
Yeah. I want you, Anthony, I want you to look how good JP Finley looks right now.
I'll be honest. I'm not sure I'm pulling this off here.
So, look, he can probably see you better than,
half of me.
Yeah, there you go. There's JP.
It honestly looks better on camera than it feels.
It feels a little tight.
I know that
sweatshirt feels a little tight because it's my sweatshirt.
Right.
JP had to borrow your boy's sweatshirt.
Right?
Yeah, it's in exchange for the headphones. Here, hold on. Yeah, let's plug those in and you can hear.
So I'll explain to Ant. So Ant, Channel 4 has a valid rule that you can't wear like logos of teams or anything. I didn't even think about it, and I was wearing a Terps quarter zip just with the big game tonight.
He's got Terps tonight. By the way, Maryland basketball knocking us off the air at 6 for the pregame. Tip off 6:30 here on the Team 980.
If you're going to Maryland the game, basketball. Drive there now. And just be there early.
Actually, I'm so sorry you're already late.
I know, seriously. I feel like we could get there faster than somebody on the Beltway. So my options were pretty limited, and I had a hit in like 10 minutes in my hotel. The round trip to it from the hotel is probably a half hour.
Longer than 10 minutes.
So yeah. I said, Hoff, you got a jacket or something? Kind of just hoping he'd have like a light jacket I could put on over my quarter zip. Problem solved. Instead, I got this joint. So
nice Lululemon waffle hoodie.
It's very nice. The chest up, I think I look kind of yoked. Like
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking right now. I'm like, okay, JP, you've been doing the curls? Like, what's up?
It looks good on the arms.
You didn't even have to do push-ups before this.
No.
This is all natural now.
And we got our times mixed up. I walk over there, and Kerwin's giving me this. Like, I had to sprint over there because I had like 40 seconds to do this. But it's definitely a little tight in the midsection. That's where Hoff and I, I'll try to show the people on the stream. That's where I miss ab day fairly frequently, and I rarely miss pizza day, so it's a different combination. So I'm going to return this to Craig here.
Thank you. Thanks for your service to the entertainment business on our show. JP Finley in my sweatshirt, everybody.
Make sure he's gentle, taking it off. You don't want to rip it.
Gentle taking it off. He successfully removed it. Now, okay. If I had to, he had this is the most JP Finley outfit ever that he had on today, because he's got a Masters t-shirt that he had to cover up with his Terps hoodie that then he had to borrow my sweatshirt to cover. television and radio's JP Finley, everybody. Rhett Lewis, he's on television as well. He's going to join us in about 7 minutes. Anthony, what's your favorite cut from DQ today? Which one of these do we now want to dive into, since we have time for exactly one cut, because I get distracted far too easily, especially when I'm out in the wild.
I will say the most interesting probably had to do with Brandon Coleman and Mikey.
I think I agree with that. So this question was asked, I think it was asked by Sam Fortier, and he asked about
Ben Standing.
Oh, Standing. I know Sam was asking. Sam asked someone about this yesterday. Peters about this yesterday. So that's why I got confused. Mm-hmm. Apologies to Ben, who's joining us at 5. Standing asked DQ, like, hey, last year Brandon Coleman finished the season at left tackle. Mike Sanders still finished the season at outside corner. Where do we see them going into the offseason? Here was the Commanders head coach.
I think I'll keep fresh eyes to see what's the best way for us to play. Nice part, these are guys that are versatile, you know, that can do more than one job. And if I didn't feel that way, I would say absolutely yes. I want to make sure I'm clear on that. I've got a lot of faith in them in those spots. But adding value and the ability to move them if you needed to, that's a big part of our game. And I have a lot of trust in them and a number of guys in this class that when called upon, they know the power of versatility. We talk about it a lot, and not just for those two, but for others as well.
I think the most interesting thing that stands out to me is there's not a definitive, like, Brandon Coleman is our left tackle, which I realize, like, Dan does the best he can there to try not to start a story, right? He's like, I have faith in those guys, and, like, he should. They played well enough last year. No, you cannot say otherwise that they did not play well enough. They couldn't get to the NFC Championship game with those guys playing those two spots. Now, if you upgrade, could they get farther? And is it more likely that they repeat that performance? Absolutely. I'm not saying those two were necessarily like all pros. I think Mikey obviously had a better season playing outside corner than Coleman did at left tackle. And I think Coleman, towards the end of the season, was kind of rough in some spots. But also, I know he was dealing with a pretty banged up shoulder. And when you're a guy that's big and strong and has to block other big, strong men, not having your full shoulder is not ideal. So I think that the fact that they are keeping the fresh eyes on it, the fact that Mikey, who knows, like if they let's say the best guy available to them at 29 is a guy they absolutely love at nickel corner. Would they keep Mikey outside and draft that guy and be like, Mikey, you're playing outside opposite of Marshawn and roll? They could. They could. If they love a left tackle, let's say Simmons from Ohio State falls and they're more comfortable with his knee injury than others are. Yeah, they could take him and start him at left tackle and have Coleman kick inside or Coleman go to right tackle. But the fact that, you know, they were that DQ was non-committal, I think is interesting, worth watching. He shouldn't be committal if he's not ready to commit. That's not me saying that he's, oh, my controversy. Like, good. Good. You're always looking to compete. That's how they built the program. And so I thought that was a good pick, Anthony. Good pick.
Thank you, sir.
And in a way, it goes with the question that I asked him in the side scrum later. We'll see. We might pull this bite as well. But I asked Dan, I was like, you know, after the season, you guys were still, like, obviously pretty upset by the way it ended. But in so many ways, you're mentally still in that, like, we have to be, what could we have done in 2024? Now that your focus is on building 2025, like, do you go back and look at that with a different lens? And he's like, yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of appreciation for what we did. And some of that is that, too, right? Like, he would never have said, Brandon Coleman's not our future left tackle during the season. He'd been like, Brandon's our starter. We're really happy with him. Whatever. Like he would not have left the door open for fresh eyes in the way that he did now, because now he's in team building mode. And so the mindset is just different this time of year, and that's good. You have to be able to make that switch. Otherwise, you can't maximize either the offseason or the in-season. When we get back, Rhett Lewis, NFL Network, joins us on set here in Indianapolis. Then Ben Standard coming up at 5.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey. I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
So, I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. We are scheduled here to have Rhett Lewis. Is Rhett coming over? Not right now. All right. All right, we'll reschedule with Rhett here shortly. But we are live here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, just having PR people come over and let us know stuff that's happening live. So we will have Mark Ross later on in the show. I know that for sure because despite the zoo that is this absolute chaos of Combine Week and people needing to reschedule because this happened and that happened, Mark and I talked earlier today, so we're going to hit play on that interview. It's really good, and that's happening at 5:30. Ben Standig is sitting idly over there. He and Mitch Tischler are having a chat across the way. He will be here at 5. But what that gives us an opportunity to do is play for you more of what Dan Quinn said today. So we will do that right now. And I thought this question from Sam Fortier was really good. And this will be bite five from the big presser, Anthony. The criteria that Dan Quinn is looking for in a commander, I think most people know, but as we re-enter scouting season here, to be very clear, there is one thing that rises above everything else when it comes to making a commander. Here's DQ.
It's probably bigger than like this specific thing, but what at the very front of the line, man, are we looking for like the competitive spirit in a player and guys who just absolutely love ball. They're willing to show that connection to their teammates, and some of that shows up in meetings like it does here about leadership, about tell me some examples. The tape and that part of the evaluation, that's clear, but we also want to go full circle and make sure it's so important the people that we bring in to this crew are going to be part of an outstanding group, and we want to make sure every single thought we can do to add to that we will. And so that's much clearer to be able to see that on full display going into this year.
So DQ talking about how the competitiveness, which again, not surprising if you've been paying attention. He talks about it every week. I also love Anthony. Can you just replay until I say that's good for at the start of this? Can you replay that bite for me real quick?
It's probably bigger than like this specific thing, but what at the very front of the line, man, are we looking for like the competitive spirit in a
you
player?
Stop right there. He wants to say dog ass competitor so bad. That's his favorite phrase in the whole world. He wants to say dog ass competitor so bad, and he stops himself because he's on a big giant podium at the NFL Combine, and he tried not to cuss as much, even though he still said stuff later on. But like the dog ass competitor is what he wants. And what Adam wants, like he/they want that tremendously high character, will do what it takes on and off the field. And what I appreciate about Dan there and why I like that bite so much is because he doesn't talk about just like what Marshawn Lattimore brings, right? Like what Marshawn brings in terms of competitiveness of like he will literally fight you. Okay, I don't think that needs a whole lot of explanation. But will you do what it takes off the field to say, I will give us a competitive advantage by how I treat and interact and bond with my teammates? Like there is a next level to the thoughtfulness here that is big time. And I really appreciate DQ stepping out and defining that in an even more critical way or an even more verbose, descript way like he did today. He was asked this question as well. This will be bite seven. Let's go to bite 10 instead. And just double clicking on that competitiveness and then how it is also defined through not just what you do on the field, but the team chemistry and the bond that these guys had. He was asked about how that grew as the season went on.
Buy-in's not a term that I use that often, honestly. I just want to talk about, like, this is how we're going to do things moving forward. I knew it wouldn't be for everybody, Nikki, in that way, but I also knew I was looking for connection between one another, how hard they would play for one another, how they would communicate together. And so those things I saw improving. I knew if we were going to be a good team, we would play a lot better at the end than we would at the start. We were going to work hard at our skills. We were going to work hard at that. But you also needed some proof. You know, to have belief is one thing, but you also, it is results. And so I'd say it got stronger of winning close games. So I'd say, Nikki, the second half is probably where belief turns into, like, or maybe I should say hope turns into belief. And somewhere in the November, December, hope transferred into that. And hope is good. You want that. But the belief is we're going to make this play. We're going to convert the fourth down. We're going to get the stop. We're going to win on this drive. That's when I saw that belief take place.
At the very beginning of that bite, I think the hope belief stuff is good, and I think he's right, right? Like, we can all hope that something's going to happen, but there was a point for all of us during the season where you start to believe. I'm not telling tales out of school here, but I was talking with Matthew Berry. Mitch and I were talking to him after DQ spoke today, and he talked about the sensation that he had watching games this year as a fan. Of course, Matthew from NBC, and you watch him on Sunday Night Football and does all the fantasy stuff, and is a huge Commander super fan. He's like, there just got to a point where I used to always think, how are we going to blow it? How are the Commanders going to lose this game? And this year it was like, I don't know. It's not the way I would go about it, but they're going to win this game. They're going to figure it out. And I think we all had that, right? When hope turned into belief and belief turned into whatever is above belief. Like, it felt undeniable in a way. But at the beginning of that, Nikki asked that question about, when did you feel like guys started to buy in to what you were doing? And he said, buy-in's not a term that I use a whole lot. And that really struck me. I, like, live, standing there 3 feet from Nikki and 10 feet from Dan, if that, was like, I'm missing what he's saying right now, because I'm stuck thinking about that idea that, like, someone who talks so much about belief, someone that talks so much about bringing a group together, doesn't talk about buy-in. But I think with that, there's an inherent that, like, if you're getting buy-in, it feels like you're selling something. And there's a difference between selling something and being something. And I think that is part of the magic of what they built, was it's not just that you convinced guys. I think that's it, right? That's the difference. It's not convincing guys to go, this is how we do it. You know, to use dance around, this is how we get down. You know, this is how we're going to do business, whatever. It's getting guys to who already believe in it, or saying, this is the way we're going to do it, take it or leave it. And if you wind up leaving it, like, we'll let you leave. We're not going to say, like, oh, you're a horrible human, and, you know, we're not going to badmouth you on the way out. But, like, if you don't want to go about your business this way, that's fine. Go try what you want to do somewhere else. And Jahan Dotson got sent away for that in some form or fashion. Emmanuel Forbes did not make the cut by midway through the season. I think that is to a lesser extent, part of what, on top of the money, obviously, what is happening with John Allen, where, like, I don't know that they see eye to eye all the time on how to do all the things, and it's fine for a fresh start for him. There's no ill will. There's no hard feelings. John played really well when he came back. He deserves credit for that. But, like, it's time to go. It's time to move on. This party particularly is over for him. And so I appreciate that from DQ and outlining that, because that also influences what happens next. Like, would a guy in free agency like DJ Reed make a lot of sense for Washington, theoretically, the corner from the Jets? Yeah, like, they need another corner. And the physical, intense style that they play here is very similar to what Robert Saleh played in New York. And I'll leave it to other evaluators who have watched more of Reed to say that he's a scheme fit or not. But from what I've read, I do think he's a name that's worth watching to spend money on potentially, right? I don't think that they will. Like, he's not going to wind up on anybody's top Commanders list because I think the price will probably be too rich to spend at that position when they're already paying Lattimore a decent chunk of change and they have so many other holes. But just to say, like, let's say that he's a guy that they target. They want to bring that guy in because he matches what they are. Not bring him in and convince him to do what they do. They're going to target, especially guys they spend money on, to be, these are guys that fit, we know who they are, or we're pretty sure that they are who we are, and that will be, that way there's no friction. Like, we can just keep moving in the direction that we're moving as fast as humanly possible. So I just think that's good. Two really good bites that also play on something that I've asked everyone that's come through here in Indianapolis and sat down with us at the NFL Combine. I've asked everybody, like, what's something that you learn from watching Washington's success this year? And, you know, a lot of those answers have been some version of the character, the competitiveness, and the fit and different versions of that on and off the field. And so it makes a lot of sense that those are the things that Dan's thinking about as we sit here in Indy. All right, when we get back, more from Quinn, or we'll see. I'm going to try to see what's up with Rhett and see if we can reschedule with Rhett Lewis of NFL Network. But Ben Standing coming up live at 5. It's the Hoffman Show here on the Team at 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. And Rhett Lewis is now joining us, NFL Network, Path to the Draft.
Let's go.
And
We're on the journey, man.
We are, dude. We are here. Yeah. There is nothing that screams like, hey, bro, we're getting in draft season, quite like being in this Hall J of Radio Row in the convention center.
It just feels, you can feel the energy in the air, right? You know?
I don't know if that's energy, right? I think that's actual literal staleness of recycled air.
It might be. It might be.
At least it rained today. I was like, oh, some nice humidity. Go step outside for lunch.
Yeah, but look, this is a marquee tentpole event on the path to the draft, and it's a great opportunity to understand more about the NFL community that makes these decisions, and obviously the players that are going to hear their name called, you know, in April in Green Bay, which is ultimately what we're trying to get to.
For sure. So since you just mentioned, like, yeah, the way that the decision makers go, I'll start with the question that I'm asking literally everyone who sits in that chair this week, which is, when you watch the Commanders' success last year, and it was so unpredictable and so unprecedented in many ways, is there something you learned about how a team can find success in the NFL or about team building that you go, like, wow, I really feel like I learned that from Washington?
Well, they get the quarterback right. So
that is certainly a valid answer.
That is probably the easiest answer. And truthfully, I mean, it's probably the most impactful answer. Now, the other part of it is they got the head coach right. And when you start rattling off, like, all right, we got to have a top-notch talent evaluator. Nailed that one with Adam Peters. We got to have a culture-building leader as a head coach in Dan Quinn. Nailed that one. Guys, you know, that want to rally around and be better for him and for the team, nailed that. And then we got to get a quarterback that carries the message of both of those two leaders in that power structure in this organization and filter it down throughout the rest of the team. Nailed it. Like, okay, yeah, sure. Can we get better on the offensive line? Absolutely. Can we find more ways to rush the passer? Absolutely. You know, right. And so, but those three things, I mean, like, that's like the you know, the triangle offense for Phil Jackson. Like, that's it, man. That's the whole thing.
You know, Tirico came on our show in the middle of the season and was like, the four things you need are those three plus ownership.
Oh, sure.
Like, ownership, they also got the ownership piece right, which most teams don't ever have the chance to change.
That's right. That's a good point.
From let's call it not great to real good. Yeah. F to A in the NFLPA survey.
That's right.
When you look at, that's, by the way, another weird thing. I'm sure all the coaches love the
that
fact
it comes
out today. Hey, you're all going to be at the podium. Yeah. Let's ask you about it. When you look at this draft for Washington and you look at, like, their team needs, is there something that really stands out to you that you're like, oh, I like the fit of how this draft class fits with the Commanders at the 29th overall pick?
Yeah. So like the way that I have it, you know, I think edge, I think tackle, I think additional wide receiver, understanding that a lot of the kind of ancillary pieces there outside of Terry McLaurin are either free agents or, you know, are or not
him,
coming
him
back.
Him and Luke are the only two guys that are like real NFL receivers on the roster.
That are back. Yeah. So this is not a great, in terms of like historically comparing receiver classes, this is not, you know, up there in the way it has been in recent years, but obviously, you know, let's see, picking at 29, I think you're still going to get a fantastic defensive lineman there.
Yeah.
You know, is a Walter Nolan from Ole Miss available there, you know, with Jonathan Allen potentially on his way out, right? Is there a Donovan Ezeraku as an edge rusher from BC who is a half sack away from the FBS lead this year, right behind Mike Green, who's probably going to go 10 spots ahead of where the Commanders are picking, if not more. So I think they're going to have an opportunity to get a badass type of player on one side of the ball that not only fits a need but fills the value portion, and you're nailing like the strength of this draft on that front.
Yeah, Rhett Lewis, NFL Network, Path to the Draft with us. You can of course watch Path to the Draft. What time are you guys nightly at this point?
So we begin the debut of Path to the Draft is the last Monday in March. I believe that's the 31st, and we'll start at 6 Eastern time. But we are on an hour before all the combine drills begin this weekend.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah, kind of providing a primer.
Check that out on NFL Network. Speaking of the combine actual drills, like,
yes,
is there a guy that you can't wait to watch test, either because you're like, that dude's going to be a freak and I can't wait to watch the show,
right,
or because you're like, I want to see if that guy can run the way I think he can, and if he can, that's going to help his draft stock half a round or whatever it is?
Yeah, so I think it's intriguing on both fronts, right? And I think, you know, Jalen Walker from Georgia, not sure if he's actually going to do anything. I don't know if they've said anything official, but there's certainly buzz that he's not going to compete in some of those athletic testing drills here. That would be unfortunate. I think he would blow it up. I think when I look at a player like Will Johnson, he fits on the other side of the scheme, where I think the cornerbacks actually have some real value in these drills, maybe more so than other position groups. You do want to see long speed from that group. And we didn't see a lot of Will Johnson this year at Michigan. Now, he could be, outside of Travis Hunter, the next corner off the board, if that's how you're, you know, characterizing Travis Hunter. But he's got potential to be like CB1 type of player in this class. And I think people really want to see, like, all right, how's he feeling? You know, like, what's his recovery look like? What's he been doing? How fast is he really? Because he had tremendous 23 tape, and then we just didn't see a lot of him in 24. So I think he's a player that fits like the intrigue, like, oh, well, I'm really kind of curious.
When you talk about the 23-24 thing, I was just talking about this with Lance Zierlein, in an interview that folks will hear later in the week. But, like, how do you try to make sense of some of these guys? There's a bunch of them in this draft that, like, the 23 tape is good.
Yes.
And then the 24 tape, for one reason or another, is not as good. Sometimes it's a situation.
Yeah.
I tried to throw Luther Burden at Lance, and he's like, you want to know why it's bad? Because the quarterback was bad in 24. I was like, well, you got that.
But that's a real thing.
Right, for sure. So you got that. You have injuries. You have, you know, some guys are just not a lot of 24 tape, period, because of the injuries. How do you try to suss that out as you put together a board and try to really, you know, talk to evaluators about how they're trying to make sense of that?
So that's where the scouts come into play. That's where you trust your scouting staff to have done, you know, the research and been in the school, you know, at practice, and have talked to coaches and have done the background on the player and have understood it from all different sides. And you can put that in the report. You guys can sit around the table when you're making, you know, having these meetings, these draft meetings, and you can actually do that and have that conversation. So I think it comes down to, again, doing your homework. Call the coaching staff. You're talking to the player. You're talking to his trainer. You're kind of getting all the information, and then you can put together the puzzle for yourself and decide whether you're comfortable with it or not. Burden is certainly one that had higher expectations. He was certainly higher on my list coming into this season than he is at this point. I had him kind of vying for like wide receiver 5 to me at this point. There's a few guys that I like a little better in that group. I mean, obviously, Tet McMillan, Emeka Buka, Matthew Golden. I really like Trey Harris from Ole Miss.
Golden's the guy that I'm intrigued by because he's, you know, we're talking about the guys that can test well. He goes out and runs like 4.3s, especially like 4.35 or below. Then
with great hands.
He's going to all of a sudden find himself in the teens.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a first round pick. I think Obuka is an absolute stone cold professional. Like, a team's going to absolutely love him. He's gone in the first round. Then I don't know. I don't know where that goes beyond that. So, But yeah, that Burton's a good one. I'm trying to think of some other guys that kind of Will Johnson, as I mentioned, certainly fit that bill.
Simmons, Ohio State, because of the injury. That's probably more of an injury thing than a lack of 24.
But that's a part of it too, and that's why the combine's so valuable. You're gonna know what's up with this player by the time you leave Indianapolis.
That's for sure. All right, I will wrap with this question for Rhett Lewis of the NFL Network. The question that I'm asking all the draft specific guys this week: who's your guy? The guy that if you get to sit down and watch tape of anybody, where you're just like, I've already watched this tape, but I just want to watch more of it. I need to round out, oh, God, I got to watch another DB. Yeah. Like, who's the guy that's your guy in this draft?
Woody Marks from USC.
Okay, that's a name I haven't heard yet. Tell me more about Woody Marks.
Okay, so Woody Marks is began his career at Mississippi State. He is a he went to Mississippi State when Joe Moorhead was the head coach, thinking he was going to be a bell cow running back. Mike Leach ends up coming in and like, holy smokes, like now I'm in an air raid offense. Sticks it out with Mike Leach. He is a tough dude. The mischaracterization about people that played for Mike Leach is that they're not tough. It's like air raid. It's all fluff.
You're preaching in the choir. The team with Cliff Kingsbury is the OC, right?
But that Mike. You couldn't play for Mike Leach if you were not a tough son of a gun. And that dude played with like a broken nose against Alabama. Like Woody Marks stayed in that system, caught a ton of balls. I think set the NCAA record for most catches by a running back in consecutive games. It was like up over 45 at one point. He has more career catches out of the backfield as a running back than every receiver that went to the Senior Bowl outside of Tez Johnson.
Wow.
So that's if you're into crazy. That sort of thing, and he ran, I mean, like he will run between the tackles. He was USC's best offensive player this year.
I love that. That is now a guy that I want to go watch because especially if he's got experience with the air raid and maybe some of the stuff that Cliff's running feel a little familiar. Yeah. And you're running back, so there you go. Rhett Lewis, Path to the Draft. Again, they're on before the combine drills this weekend and then starting in late March, 6 o'clock nightly on NFL Network. Ben Standing joins us live on set here in Indianapolis next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, where you see the Athletics' Ben Standing. We could play the fancy Not My Beat imager, Ben, but then you just have to be sitting here longer, not being able to hear it because you're not wearing headphones. And so we're going to get right into it, if that's good with you.
I got here Sunday. I'm not trying to act like I'm, like, exhausted, like I've been running marathons, but I was basically too lazy to put the headphones on. But that's kind of where I'm at right now.
That is Indianapolis they are, Wednesday.
Like, right here, my iron starts at. It's, like, right there. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. I'm going to veer. We'll get to the things that Dan Quinn said and all that stuff in a second. But we're inside baseball combine talk for a second. I feel like next year I want to come later in the week because I know it gets emptier from like this part of it, the media part of it, because all of the GM and head coach pressures are pushed earlier in the week. But the workouts don't even start until after most of the media leaves. And this year that includes me. My flight takes off 90 minutes after the first workout begins. Like, I actually want to stay and see some of that stuff and do that. Like, what? I guess really, Ben, if I'm going to ask you a question about this, why the hell do they do this way? What are we all doing? A question that many people in NFL media have asked themselves in Indianapolis.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, and I wrote about this a little bit earlier in the week about like what am I watching for at the combine, and honestly, most of the story was about the veteran market.
Right.
It wasn't really about this. Now, of course, we're in a world where a year ago that would not have been the case. We were all about the quarterbacks, but this is kind of where the free agency really kind of starts, or the trade market at least, right? And the draft. It's not that it is secondary, but, you know, the only thing that really, I think, matters for most of these teams is, like, the measurables. And, you know, some of that does obviously factor in.
The medicals are huge.
The medicals and the talking, you know, the interviews that they do, at least, you know, like for Dan Quinn, he doesn't know any of these guys for the most part. So they get that feeling. The on-field stuff, I mean, it's not that it doesn't matter. It's just I think it matters less. And, you know, I think also that they want to build out the week. They want you on Saturday to be in front of your television watching. I guess none of them are working out, but they want you to be watching, in theory, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and the receivers doing that. So I think that's why they push it back. But you're right. It is a lot of people we know have already left or are leaving later today. So, yeah, it's odd in that regard that the actual thing we think we're here for is the backdrop to what's actually happening.
It's actually two events.
Yeah.
And there's, like, NFL – like, I don't know, the NFL spring break is the Super Bowl, because that's there and that's zany, and there's a bunch of other yahoos wandering around. This is more for the nerds. So it's whatever you want to call this portion of, like, the media stuff. And then there's the actual NFL Combine. But in many ways, the NFL, publicly at least, the NFL Combine hasn't actually started yet.
Right. I mean, also, like, the agents are here. Like, the Super Bowl, some of the league is there. Senior Bowl, some of the league is there. Here, more or less, somebody from all 32 teams is here. A couple teams have leave their bigger decision makers behind. But, okay, almost everybody's here. The prospects are here. The agents are here. Some agents will be talking to all 32 teams about free agents and draft picks.
Right.
So the business of football is happening all around us. We are not
privy.
That's
what we should call it. The first part of the week is the NFL Business Summit. And the second part of the week, there's a scouting combine.
Right.
There. So we can be careful, though. If the NFL gets word of that, they'll somehow monetize the NFL Business Summit. Hey, Roger, give me my cut. All right. As for the business summit, and that includes a press conference, JP is just interrupting in the middle of the show. Like, I don't have tremendous ADD.
Somebody was like the yelling like right over our heads. There's a lot going on here.
Welcome to the zoo. No respect for this radio show. Again, I don't know if you saw this. Our Audacity sign. No respect for the show. They didn't spell our company name right.
That's the product I use for my podcast. Like, when I have to produce it, I use Audacity.
Yeah, we got to get you Adobe Audition. Upgrade to the
somebody wants to pay for it. You know, I take the free. I get the free version off the internet.
Dan Quinn today, the biggest news that he makes, to the extent that this is news, is being non-committal, more so on Brandon Coleman than Mikey Sanders, but both of them saying, like, we have fresh eyes. Sanders still, hey, he could play inside, outside. Okay, well, he did that last year. For him to say Coleman is not definitively, like, we're shutting it down, he's our left tackle, done. Is that surprising to you, not surprising to you, significant, insignificant?
So in full context, when we talked about Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, I don't know that they gave much of a direct answer to anything. Adam Peters admitted that John Allen was granted a request for a trade because we already had, but that was right out there. Other than that, neither one of them really said anything very specific. But, you know, I did ask both of them about Coleman, because to me, we could talk about the offensive line all day we want, but who's playing where? You could tell me that they're going to have one Sam Cosmi's back, all five starters back in their positions, and I wouldn't be like, well, that's insane, but you want
to. It doesn't seem like optimal, but not insane. They did make the NFC Championship game with that offensive line, and the quarterback was still a rookie. What happens when he's got a year of experience under his belt?
Right. I mean, you know, and Wiley, look, I mean, you know, Wiley technically didn't give up a sack according to PFF, and like his money, if you want to go out and get a tackle, cool. It's going to be a lot of money on the free agent market.
$10 million for a tackle is not that bad of a price.
Right. But what gets interesting is, like, if Coleman, you know, some people thought pre-draft he was more of a guard. You know, if you were to move him inside and, say, draft a tackle in my 10-point plan for the Commanders, I had them signing Alar Jackson, the Rams left tackle last couple of years. He's only 27, so it's still, you know, a younger guy. Now, all of a sudden, you'd have a couple of younger guys. You could draft one. But the point is, where is Coleman? There was some promise. I mean, he's obviously a huge dude. You see the athleticism. He also gave up 10 sacks. It felt like a lot of times last year when Jaden Daniels was getting pressured quickly, it seemed to be coming from the left side. And, okay, so Adam Peters said, hey, look, he did pretty good considering he was a rookie. It's a tough adjustment, and there's no argument there.
But it doesn't mean that you can't do better. It's like, really, what is he for 2025? So I guess the question then becomes, and I'm sure they're trying to answer this question, I'm curious, like, what your answer would be, is the determining factor of where Brandon Coleman plays Brandon Coleman, or what else they can get, right? Because if they can find, let's say, the kid Simmons from Ohio State falls in the draft, and right. But they're more comfortable with his knee than the other teams that let him fall, draft him, like, you're drafting him to play left tackle. If you don't, like, you're just drafting another Brandon Coleman type that might be a tackle, might be a guard. Like, how do you decide which one is where?
You know, in my fantasy, like, baseball league, some guys have position eligibility at multiple spots. So I'll go through the draft or the auction and be like, okay, a second baseman, this guy is a good value, I'll get him, and I'll take this guy who can play second or short and move him to short. You can't exactly do that here. I mean, you can, but you
can. Well, you can, but, like, if you're just moving around the same exact pieces, it's like, I don't want to use the deck chairs on the Titanic, you know, moving around, because this is not the Titanic going down, but, like, if we swap chairs, you and I are sitting in the same chair. These are the same exact model, and all we've done is change their places.
Right.
And if you're going to get a third-round guy or a second-round guy who is pretty athletic, might be able to play tackle, but might be better suited at guard, congrats. You've now got two Brandon Colemans, and I don't know at that point, is it worth... Now, if you have two Brandon Colemans and one of them gets to play guard, like, that could be cool. But, like, which one? And that's the thing I don't know exactly what the process is yet. I don't know if they know in terms of figuring that part out.
Right. Like I said, that's the part. Like, it's just we all get that offensive line could be better, needs to be better, and forget what they are. If you build up your offensive line, it makes everything behind you better, helps the quarterback, all that stuff. You can, you know, and to me, that is always where I would rather spend my money in offense besides the quarterback. It's just a matter of, yeah, do they think that Coleman is legitimately going to develop into that kind of player? Like, the one thing I was thinking about is, let's just say they willing to move Coleman inside and think, you know what, he's got a better chance to be a Pro Bowl level player there. Okay, cool. I mentioned signing an Alaric Jackson. Obviously, it's a lot of teams would be interested in a younger tackle, but let's just say that would happen. You know, if you drafted, you could still draft a tackle in the first round, right? That wouldn't be insane. And now all of a sudden, if you pull Wiley, move him to guard while Sam Cosmi is out, that gives you a nice fill in there. And then when Cosmi comes back, you all of a sudden would have Jackson, this 27-year-old tackle who's had a good experience, Coleman at left guard, Beata, she was very good last year, Sam Cosmi, obviously good, and now you're just first-round tackle. I don't know if they'll be better because we have to see it, but on paper, you'd have three younger guys plus Beata and Cosmi. All of a sudden, I feel like the offensive line has improved significantly.
Right.
And I didn't, a first-round pick is a good investment, and signing Jackson would be something, but like, that to me is super interesting. Now, you could do the same thing, draft a guard instead of a tackle and maybe keep Coleman at tackle, but that's my question. I don't know. Some people, like I was talking to Mitch Tischler, who's a big offensive line guy, he thinks, no, you leave Coleman there, stay with him, he buys that, and maybe that's accurate, but that's what I wonder. What do they think? Because that will dictate to me what they do with everything else.
The one thing I can probably safely say is one heck of a term, by the way. Like, if they get another Coleman type in that he could play tackle or guard, the way they'll probably decide is they'll have them compete for it, because that's how they do. Like, and that's important, and that's the way it should go. Is like, they probably won't, like, they probably have ideas, but they're going to let it play out because that's just how they go about their business. Ben Standick, The Athletic, with us here on the Hoffman Show, live on Radio Row at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. If you had to bet a small amount of your own money on where they spend big money, or I would say the most money, where do you think that this $100 million post-John Allen trade or cut goes this offseason?
So are we talking just external or things like Terry McLaurin?
No, if it's all internal / bringing guys back, that now all of a sudden Bobby costs a little more, Zach costs a little more, you extend Terry, and that's your biggest chunk, then I guess they'll go try to go bargain bin shopping again. But like, I was thinking more less specific to guys, more specific to positions.
Gotcha. I think the defensive line has got to be where they go. Like I said, I'm not saying they shouldn't upgrade on the offensive line, but again, you could bring the same group back and be like, okay, like you said, Coleman gets better over the course of the year, James better, things like that. Defensive line right now, you know, they're moving on from John Allen. Dorrance Armstrong was fine last year, but I think, you know, look, he was more of a role player with Dallas, and, you know, sometimes less is more. It was some of these guys, you see that a lot in the NBA. Some guys are good for 15 minutes, not good for 30 minutes.
Right, you get exposed. It's too much.
And Armstrong was fine, but, like, you need something more across from him. You know, they're letting Allen go. Cool. They have no backup tackles right now, right? You have Payne and Newton. That, even if those two guys played 70% of the snaps, that's a 60% then still there. So they still need that too. So between those two situations, it just feels like that to me is where they have to go. Because even if you bring back your Dante Fowlers, your Cleveland Farrells, that's not enough. So I just feels like the defensive line, not only, and plus, look, they were 30th against the run.
Yes.
You know, they did, you know, Fowler and Luvu gave them some good pass rush, but, you know, it was overall somewhat inconsistent. And Fowler, you know, look, they got more at him you could have imagined, but I don't think he's a realistic two-way guy for them. You know, he played
that. He can be a situational pass rusher. Great.
Yeah.
But they need a one. And, like, that's the hard thing. And it's actually, we should have this conversation because I heard you on with Robert Mays on the Athletic Football Show. Robert's doing a good series, or you're talking to beat reporters. Obviously, Ben, part of their great network over at The Athletic, about the most interesting teams in the NFL, and the Commanders were on the list. And I feel like you are lower on, and this is, this is fun radio fodder because Andrew Berry has shut it down. The Browns GM has said, we are not trading Myles Garrett. But eventually they might trade Myles Garrett because Myles Garrett also seems like he is very serious about never wanting to play for the Cleveland Browns again. And eventually that those two guys that are telling themselves and the world the truth right now, those two realities are going to eventually butt heads. So you seem like you are lower on the prospects of Garrett than certainly I am. So what? So I don't misrepresent you. What? Where are you at on their potential to bring in Myles Garrett or spend big money on someone like a Myles Garrett?
I mean, certainly they have enough pieces to make a trade work. They have multiple, you know, first round pick this year and for next year. That alone gets you in the door, I would think. My thing is, again, you've got 28 free agents. I know they made the Final Four last year, but even if you said they're going to bring back all 28 guys, I don't know that that says to me they are ready to go to the, like, they're Myles Garrett away from being that next level. And I know you're like, well, what, people are like, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about? They lost to Philly, and otherwise they got all the way. But, you know, a lot of things worked out for them last year. Winning 5 games in a row down the stretch on the final play from scrimmage is not normal, right? The schedule doesn't get harder, all these things. So I think they do need more, but I don't know that I'm ready to say they are the one player away. Plus, in order to make that trade, you have to give away picks. We know Adam Peters logically wants to build through the draft. They have 7 picks this year, but only 3 in the top 145. 3 in the top 80, but 3 in the top 145. So if you trade away, let's say a first this year or next year, you only have really 2 premium picks as it stands to add the other things that you need. So you have to weigh that. And that's where I'm sort of like, I can see them going out and spending money and signing a free agent for good money, but trading picks and then having to give money to somebody, to me it feels like they're a little bit further away than that.
So here's my counter argument to that. Finding the kind of guys they found last year is not easy.
Right.
But it's also a lot easier than finding a Myles Garrett.
Absolutely.
And they do, outside of Jaden, and if you want to put Terry in this class, fine. They don't have blue chip guys.
Right.
That is actually the difference between them and the Eagles, is the Eagles have blue chippers all over the freaking place. It's disgusting how well they've drafted. And part of that is they've taken, you know, have they missed on some guys? Sure. But they haven't really missed on their first round picks and second round picks in a couple of years. And they've made some smart trades down, to make sure. And when they've traded up, like Cooper DeJean was obviously a big deal. And, you know, the Commanders on the other side of that trade and did fine on their end of it. But like, they haven't missed at the top, and they've got enough picks late that they also hit a couple extra swings. For Washington, I don't know how they necessarily get those blue chip guys, because now you're stuck in the bottom of the round, and sure, maybe you can get it. But like when Philly got Jalen Carter, they were up, what, like 11, something like that? They had their one down year, and they made the most of it by getting Jalen Carter.
Right.
Some of these other guys they've gotten have been kind of more in the middle. Washington is probably going to be picking in the 20s for the foreseeable future. So how are you planning on getting the thing that you're missing? And to me, that's why Myles Garrett, even for 2 firsts, I'm in on that, especially if I think one first is going to be 29 and the second first is hopefully going to be 32 next year, or at the very least 31.
Look, I can't argue against anything you said. He's obviously...
I won the argument. But...
Well, I mean, I said, look, he's going to be better than, you know, anybody else you could get at that spot. It's a core position. You definitely need that. That was easily their biggest weakness. I mean, they weren't the only team to give up a bazillion yards to Saquon Barkley, but every single game... He got them, and if Detroit hadn't stopped giving Jahmyr Gibbs the ball, the same thing was happening in that game. So they obviously need that. There's no argument. Like I said, it's just, that's what's so weird about this situation. Under normal circumstances, we wouldn't even be debating this. They would be building through the draft again, but they went so much further.
And they might have I think they have the best quarterback in the conference.
I agree.
Which is also a game changer. And so I guess, like, in some ways, the question then becomes, on this theoretical, theological argument that we're having, football theology with Hoffman and Standig here on the Team 980, how different is Garrett minus 2 ones versus Josh Sweat at $23 million a year, or whatever he's going to cost? And like, that's the calculation you have to make. And you know, if they think Josh Sweat can be a blue chip type of guy in their system, okay, well, maybe that's a different conversation. But I think the difference between Josh Sweat and Myles Garrett is pretty significant. And that's not to say Josh Sweat's not better than everything that they have right now. It's just Myles Garrett's Myles Garrett.
Right. You know, like I said, I think, like you mentioned, Philly, and I think that's the point of their whole season that was, it was discussed and yet overlooked at the same time. They nail their draft year over year over year. And because of that, they constantly have guys on rookie deals, not just a quarterback, but a bunch of different guys. So they always have cheaper talent. And then you can go out and make those moves. They traded for A.J. Brown a couple years ago. You know,
which, by the way, if you can do something like that, where it's a one-for-one swap, that is a huge key. The Eagles went one-for-one, one draft pick, middle of the first round for A.J. Brown. If you can trade 29 for a guy that's A.J. Brown caliber, obviously, you do that in a heartbeat.
Right. But so, like, if you made the trail for Myles Garrett and you give up first this year, next year, again, they've only had the one draft. This year, you only have the second and a third. Then, it's, you know, most of the picks are later in round one. So you're, as it stands, you're not going to build up that pipeline. It's, look, it's unfortunate for this group, as we know, that draft picks between Daron Payne and Jaden Daniels are gone. So they don't have any of that to work with. And I just think that's such a that puts you back in a way. So it just feels like to me they've got to get at least another draft under their belt to collectively have more of these younger pieces. They're going to be part of this core group. Also, you know, the cheaper contracts. I think to me that's more important. And you know, the NFL is getting weird right now. How many guys are requested trades?
A ton.
And it feels like this could be a trend that starts to continue.
Well, I think the trade market is going to be more, and we're guys that have watched the NBA and how wild that trade market has been, and it takes a while to find itself. And so there's a chance to, because one team's trash might be another team's treasure. And so if you have the right scheme fit, you have the right medical staff, you have the right stuff, then you can take someone who isn't working, or just sometimes it's just timeline. Like, oh crap, we need cap relief and we're not going to be good for 2 years. Here's this guy that's pretty good, but the way we structured his contract and where he is in it saves us a bunch of cap money. You're good right now and take him. And whether that's a Deebo Samuel or a Cooper Kupp, or obviously those two teams are hoping to be good right away, but like with where they are cap wise, that could work for the Commanders. And I think the other thing that's like important to explain when we talk about these trades, that you certainly understand as someone who does a lot with the contracts and talks to agents and stuff, is when you're the team receiving a player in a trade, it's always cheaper for you because the prorated signing bonus money, that's the dead cap that's being left behind, is never your responsibility. And so by nature, you're getting the player at a discount, even if you keep them on the current deal. And I think that is, like, in a way, the market inefficiency that is never going to be able to get fixed in the NFL, and why trades are probably, and trades for veterans, and especially for a team like Washington that has a rookie quarterback contract and thus an extra $60 million a year of market value to play with, based off what Jaden should be making and what he is, like, I think it's probably a good way to build a team.
I think that's the part that's the most compelling, is you basically have a 2-year window before Jaden is eligible for an extension. And does that compel you to do more? I think to me that's the part that would get me to think, okay.
Well, especially if I can sign guys to 2-year deals with not a lot of guaranteed money in year three.
Right. Yeah, right. No, for sure. But, you know, like I said, if you make the Myles Garrett move, helps you tremendously on the line and the defense as a whole. You give up that first round pick, and now maybe there's enough move again. If you're gonna give Terry an extension, which I think is gonna happen, then you know you're probably doing a little bit less in free agency versus if they kind of do what they did last year in terms of, you know, signing like a Luvu, a Biotish, so on, but sign more of them, sign better players. Then now you're spreading
Josh Sweats of the world, that caliber.
Yeah, I mean, like if Cooper Kupp becomes a free agent, or you know, there's other receivers in that range. And that's the thing, like they as it stands, they need everything other than the quarterback, and that's the part that's so tricky. If they had more guys, if they hadn't just last year signed everybody to a 1-year contract, which was smart to do for that scenario, then we'd have a better feel for who they are and what they are. We don't know who's coming back. They don't have final say. I mean, a lot of these guys aren't going to have like major markets, but we don't know who is coming back or who's not. Does Bobby Wagner want to go out and live back in the West Coast? I don't know. You know, who are they getting? They have, so if Myles Garrett's cool, still have questions on the offensive line. We don't know who the receivers are beyond Terry. Is Zach Ertz really going to give you that again?
But my counter argument to that would simply be, if you sign Josh Sweat, all those things are still true. Now,
but you don't give up the picks, though.
Right, but you're in the next 2 years, how much are those picks at the end of the first round going to help you? Like, Jaden broke our brains. Rookies aren't good. They're not supposed to be good.
Well, the only thing is, like, you know, in the NBA, if we said the 29th pick, we'd be like, all right, whatever. It's who knows? The NFL, you're talking about a starter at one of many positions.
Sure.
You know, even that's the thing with the NFL in day three, people tend to look down on them. Where do you think, forget the special teams guys, like, where do you think the left guard comes from? Where do you think the library? So, like, all these guys, all those spots will help you. So that, again, like, that's the part. And this goes back to the Brandon Coleman thing. If they look at that guy and say, dude, we're good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that can start to change the calculus. Now you feel like you've already got a core piece there. Now going to get a Myles Garrett might be a little bit different. But if you're uncertain what you exactly have beyond Jaden and a couple other guys, then I don't know if you're one player away.
For sure. And, well, here's the last thing I'll say to kind of wrap up this conversation is then it just – what it does is it takes away your margin for error. If you trade 2 ones or whatever for Miles, or you even trade, let's say just for the sake of this conversation, you traded your first 2 picks this year for Myles Garrett. Now you're down to 5. If you nail 4 of the 5, then it doesn't matter. It's just that's not how the draft works. The draft, typically, you want the most swings possible, and what you do is you shrink down your margin of error. Now you can make that up by trading back in other rounds, et cetera, but that's a much higher tightrope to walk.
And just to go on that, this is where Adam Peters is really interesting. Where he really made his reputation in San Francisco was day three guys.
Right.
One guy's a free agent, Hufanga, the safety.
Yep.
If Jeremy Chinn were to move on, would be somebody to look at. That's where Adam Peters really got value for the 49ers. If that starts to happen, it didn't quite happen this year yet. We'll see how some guys like Jordan McGee develop. Then all of a sudden it goes to a whole other level. But
right.
But you can't. I'm not going to assume that a 5th round pick is going to turn into an all pro the way Hufanga did.
Right. And Adam, we trust, but within reason. The man is human. Ben Standing, you can read his work in The Athletic. You can also check out the Last Man Standing podcast. Ben, appreciate your time, sir. Thank
Great.
You.
Thanks, Ben.
When we get back, Mark Ross, NFL Network, former NFL executive, joins us here on Radio Row. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, where you see Mark Ross, former New York Giants executive. He's been with the NFL Network long enough that Washington fans don't have to be mad.
Yeah, well.
And you've been great on the show before.
I was
so
Eagles,
know.
Too. So,
it was great
that.
To have
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
and good
yeah,
to see
no,
you.
And we used to beat up on y'all, too, the Giants and the Eagles. So, sorry about
but
that.
Yeah. But it is a new day.
New day, new era. And I'm not with this team, so I'm rooting for y'all, too. So, you got the best quarterback.
That is for sure, and that's something I remember talking to you about before the draft last year. And it's been great having you on the show. And you keep saying nice things about Washington, then they do great things, and now people in Washington can love you. So I want to actually start with the question that I'm asking everybody that comes through, because I think you're the only guy that's actually been in the team building process. I think I'm going to be able to talk to this week. So is there something the way that Washington built what they built last year? That changed the way you think about the NFL or team building. See, and maybe for someone who's thought about it as much as you, it's clarifying more than changing. But is there something that either changed or clarified about team building and success in the NFL
I don't think they changed. I just think they got with what everybody else, well, the successful teams was doing, and that's some sort of stability and competency in the key decision-making positions of, okay, our GM, Adam Peters, this is not a question mark here. He's been established. Our head coach here, Dan Quinn. Okay, is he the superstar? I don't know, but he's been established. He's won a lot of games with the Falcons. So you put those two pillars in place, and then it seemed as if they had a good plan of, let's just put this solid, consistent foundation here with the offseason signings. Oh, okay, now let's just go draft the best quarterback in the NFC with the 2nd pick in the draft. That helps out a lot. So when you're 3 pillars, you crush those, you're off to a good start.
Yeah, and not to mention ownership, if you want to add that one in too. Like, that's the one who puts them all in place.
I'll leave y'all the Washingtonians to crush Snyder. But, yes, that helps as well.
If you think of the 4 main pillars of a successful organization.
I think that Snyder regime had everybody in Washington, so I got plenty of family and friends in Washington, man, and you know, just to get that cloud out of there the first year, and then okay, now you bring in the fresh ownership group, certainly that helps.
So the thing that I feel like for me answers that question, and I'm curious to then run this by you as someone who's done it, is the competitive character part of the evals and how they built the team. And it's like, you can get, I'll use Madden ratings as a way to make this universal, right? there's a bunch of different players in the NFL that have a 77 Madden rating, right? Like, that's actually not that hard to find.
Yeah.
But, like, how do you get there? Is it because you are 77 every single week? Or are you a guy that is plays like an 88 one week and a 65 the next? Like, the consistency of the competitive character that they had and the types of guys that they targeted, I think, was clarifying in a lot of ways that everyone was moving in the same direction.
Yeah, I think when you evaluate, when I watch and evaluate players, you shouldn't have to look for them. So let's just say I'm this receiver, let's say a linebacker, and I'm like, okay, he's not involved in the action. He's like, when you're watching film and someone's always showing up,
yeah,
that's competitiveness. That's production, as opposed to, well, he's 6'5 and 300 pounds, and he may do this, he could do this, and he's up and down, and he shows flashes. Those are the ones that continue to sort of flash, whereas those guys that are always at it, the competitiveness that you can easily see when you watch them, you watch Terry McLaurin, you don't have to guess where he is or what he's doing. He's giving it his all. You see that. Jaden Daniels, you see it in them. Those are the players that they brought in year one. Even the vets that they brought in, the Austin Ecklers of the world.
Right.
It was, okay, he may be tapped out, but this guy's bringing it. So that's how they built it and will continue the build. Now, the best mix is super talented guys that are super competitive. But where's the blend? Where's the formula of, okay, a little bit less talent, but the competitiveness, or a bunch of talent, the competitiveness? That's really what you're trying to achieve, that ultimate mix there.
Mark Ross, NFL Network, with us here on The Hoffman Show. Okay, well, let me ask you a dumb question then. Why didn't everybody get it right all the time? Like, what is the hard part about executing that? Because it sounds so simple, and I think that's why sometimes, like, people on my side of the business get it wrong.
Yep.
And then I think sometimes people on that, like, have been there will criticize, like, oh, what does that guy know? And it's like, then they get on TV and they say the same exact things that we've all been saying.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, so the idea is not bad, it's the execution of it. Why is it so hard to execute?
Because there's so many variables, there's so many factors that go into one player, whether it's his own qualities, whether it's injuries, whether it's scheme, whether it's fit with that team, whether it's the coaching that comes with the player that gets there, mentally, if they're prepared and ready, mature enough. And not everybody, not all players are made to make it. And that's, I think right now, all 300 of these guys at the combine are going to be Pro Bowl players. You know, that's the way we talk about these players. But no, the reality is there's going to be 10. And there's going to be 200 that don't make the NFL and aren't very good. So I think the expectations that they are all are going to make it is just not realistic, because just like anything or any good profession in life that you do, there's going to be an upper echelon of talent, a good group, a lot of middle class, and then a ton of people that don't make it. And I think, unfortunately, that doesn't get applied to the NFL or sports, where at this time of year, all these guys are Pro Bowl players. And when they're not, like, they're a bust. They don't know what they're doing. But the intrinsic nature of scouting is find the gems and fill in the gaps there, and then makes the team.
Which is also the alternate answer to that first question I ask you is, like, I don't know, just be good at your job. Like, how do you be good? Well, be good at your job, because, like, oh, you can't possibly take a running back or a middle linebacker in the middle of the first round and then take a tight end. Well, like, unless it's Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, and Sam LaPorta.
It all changes, right? And that's the thing. Like, everything is not set, like, you have to do it this certain way. You have to adjust, but depending on what team you are and who you have on your team and the players and where you're going, the quarterback you have, all 32 teams are completely different in what they are and where they are and where they're trying to get. Of course, they're trying to win the Super Bowl, but they're all at different places, so you all can't do it the same. And every year, whoever wins the Super Bowl, how do we do it like them? Well, they're all different, and it changes. And for this year, I've been saying it over and over. You want to be like the Eagles? Just hit on all your draft picks the past 4 years.
Right.
Just do that, and you're fine.
Yeah, 100%.
And it was the same with the Patriots. How do we be like, go get Tom Brady, go get the greatest quarterback.
Right, and then having played a discount for 20 years. And that gives you a lot of wiggle room. And I will say, like, the Eagles thing, hit on all of them, but also trade back a bunch. Make sure that you have, if you do miss, that you have extra picks. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Which actually brings me to my next question. As we're talking to Mark Ross, former NFL executive with the Giants and the Eagles, we'll just say that part quickly and move on. And of course, now with the NFL Network here on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. The Myles Garrett situation, you know, it's not going to be anything that happens quickly, especially as definitive as Andrew Berry was behind us at the podium yesterday. But conceptually, the idea that the Commanders can make a big move, and people are like, oh, you can't do that, can't go all in. It's like, well, there are other ways to you know, get more picks by trading back. Okay, you trade a couple away a couple picks, you trade back, now you get the right number later, but you, if you're good at your job and you nail the picks, then it can work out.
Yeah.
But for Washington, if you're in that front office and, you know, Adam Peters is going around the room soliciting opinions, what are you saying about the idea of giving up, let's say, two firsts for Myles Garrett?
Yeah, I think two firsts wouldn't be bad, but though, as you mentioned about Andrew Berry and how definitive he was, he's not, he's just, unless it's something unbelievable, he's not going to move off of it. So this is, of course, fun to talk to about Myles Garrett because it is Myles Garrett, but realistically, and what Andrew Berry's saying, some other GMs I would not believe, but him, I know Andrew, like he's being honest about this thing. Like, he's not letting this guy go. So I think it'll be fun to talk about until something does or does not happen with Miles, but realistically, I don't think it'll happen.
So conceptually for Washington, if you are there's not another guy that's, you know, going to be the cost of Miles, obviously. But if you think about making trades and giving up draft capital, is that something that, based off where they are, they have to re-sign a ton of free agents. But they were in the NFC Championship game last year. So how are you thinking about that?
So their timeline got accelerated so fast, whereas last year it seemed as if, okay, fun team, rookie quarterback.
See if they're any
be
good.
Be competitive. Yeah. See what's going on. Now it's we can beat the Eagles, you know. So it's,
only team that did after week five, by the way.
That is true. We won't mention Jalen Hurts got hurt, but that's okay. But
true.
No, they are. They beat them, and they went toe to toe. So they should be looking at it as, why not us? We got the best quarterback in the NFC. We got a good coach. We got all of this, and so their timeline and the way they're building is sort of changed a little bit. Where, all right, can we be a little bit more aggressive? Should we be a little bit more aggressive? And that's what they're talking about all this all season. Now, you don't want to go crazy. You don't want to overvalue and be desperate. But you can be a little bit more aggressive, and we have a chance at this thing.
So my theory of the case with this roster is, to going back to the Madden ratings, right? Like, they've been really good at finding the 78 guys. Yeah, like, hey, how do we get men? Maybe even we coach them up, put them in a different scheme, and, you know, they're an 82 by the middle of the season. Like, oh, we got a deal. Getting the 95 guys hard. Getting the 99 club guys. That's what's hard. And that's why, like, I'm like, I would do whatever it takes for Miles. I'm not going to go break Andrew Berry's spirit down if he's this defiant about it. Yeah. But, like, that getting those kinds of guys costs money and or draft capital. So is that, do you feel like Washington's at a place in their timeline where that is something that they should be pursuing?
Yeah, it's always that fine line of, all right, how desperate how much do we want to give up to get, and as you said, great players usually are either super high draft picks or you pay a ton of money for them in free agency. And
Washington, or you got to draft them, but they're not 99s immediately.
Yeah, or you strike gold, you know, with somebody. But, you know, Terry McLaurin, you know, you strike gold like that. So for them, you need to, okay, this is where we are, and we might have to pay a ton to go get this. And, why not? Why not them? And, again, I get back to the landscape of who they're competing against and where they are as an organization. Like, this could be their time for a while.
So if you are looking at either this draft class or this free agency class, is there anybody that you would have at the very top of the board for Washington that, not necessarily, it doesn't have to be like, oh, that's the guy I'd spend a ton of money on. Like, I know one guy that a lot of fans like that I like for them is Darius Slayton. I don't know how much Darius Slayton's going to cost. Probably not anything crazy. But, like, that idea of adding the vertical speed, I'm all on board with trying to pursue Darius Slayton. Is there anybody for Washington that sticks out for you?
Nobody just... you know, off the top of my head, I'd say. But for the most part, I don't think Darius Slayton really is going to move the needle for you guys. But when I watch the offense, you do need another person opposite Terry, for sure. You know, that was the – when I as fantastic as Jaden is in the run game, but you do need maybe one or two other playmakers there because when you're throwing to the Noah Browns of the world, like that's not going to get it done for y'all. There needs to be more there.
Mark Ross, you can catch him, NFL Network, their show Path to the Draft, obviously. They have all kinds of great stuff leading up, not only here in Indianapolis and the coverage all weekend, but leading up to the draft over the next few weeks. Good to finally meet you in person, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Mark Ross, everybody. We'll be back with more from Indy next on the Team 980. All right, Anthony. I just realized I was doing my hand signals back to you on the out time off when you weren't on camera, so I just look like an absolutely insane person just signing to myself. Pick your favorite thing in the Real Things folder. We got time probably for just one.
All right,
maybe we got time for two, but pick your favorite one first, just in case.
All right, I'm gonna go with Tarazi. She was on The View, and they asked her why now retire.
What made you decide that now was the time?
Oh God, that's such a hard question. It didn't just happen overnight. I think it was something that, as you know, the seasons started piling on. 20 seasons, you know.
Yeah.
12 seasons overseas.
Yeah.
I think just being 42 and really doing everything that I could have ever dreamt of doing on a basketball court.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt full. I was happy. I was ready to move on. I don't know what that looks like, but I was ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you want your legacy to be with all of that?
Yeah, what else was there to do, really? Like,
yeah. I mean,
I think the one thing that I always prided myself on was the work. I loved showing up to work every single day. Like, I got that from my parents. You know, they came to this country in 78, and they always went to work every single morning. Like, my dad would get in that car at 4 a.m., drive an hour and a half, and that's just what you did, you know? You got up and you went to work, and you try to make the best of it for you and your family.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do for my teammates, show up for them every single day. And that loyalty to me was always huge.
She's arguably the GOAT. She's one of the best ever to do it. Diana Taurasi retiring yesterday at 42, which means, Anthony, absolutely horrifying thing has happened to a dear friend of mine.
Oh, no. Alicia's the oldest in the WNBA now?
Yeah. That was immediately what happened. So my good friend Alicia Clark, former Mystic, now back with Seattle Storm, three-time WNBA champ. Now at 37, the oldest player in the WNBA. Alicia, I'm so sorry. Time comes for us all. Time's come for us on the show today. We'll see you tomorrow. Terps, Spartans, next.